You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and have a guest, Olivia Dolphin, artist. I discovered Olivia in the University of Rhode Island magazine, an alma mater of mine, and where Olivia had gone to school. She does a journal. She's a fantastic artist. I just found out about her, and we're chatting here. We're also going to have a song by Olivia as well. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Ken. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here and happy we were able to connect through something that we both have in common.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're reaching you from the great, great, great city of Providence, Rhode Island, home of art and music and wonderful things in the small state of Rhode Island. But starting out first, were you an artist?
That's such an interesting question, and I'm sure everybody, I should have listened to what other people were going to say about this on your podcast. I should have cheated. I do think that I had some artistic motivations when I was born. My father is a musician, casually. Like, he loves to play the guitar, and he is really amazing. He's kind of an improver, and that is absolutely something that I think I inherited from him, even though I had to, well, you know, you work at it and things like that, but you kind of have these predispositions to certain things. So my dad can just pick up a guitar and like kind of find some chords that he likes, and then he'll like make a song out of them, and that is absolutely how I approach my own songwriting. So I do think I was an artist when I was born. I always had a big imagination. I was always writing stories, and just loved the arts more. But I don't know if it was because I was so bad at math that I had to be an artist, you know? Yeah. Like, I definitely was born bad at math. I don't think that that was anything my brain could ever have overcome. So I don't know what was first, like, was I just more artistic and then the math stuff didn't come, or like, was I so bad at math that I had to overcompensate and have a better imagination? I could not understand math at all. So so that's where I stand. I do think that I was born into it a little bit.
Yeah, and I could have asked you, were you a mathematician when you were born? You say, hell's to the no.
No, I absolutely was not. I think I was born bad at math, that's for sure.
So I mentioned a couple pieces of your creativity. One of the pieces that was featured in the University of Rhode Island magazine that I mentioned had to do with some of the literary work you do in a literary journal. I was wondering if you could kind of take a launch off from that and tell listeners like what you do with the journal, what it's trying to capture, and other people involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. So I run a literary magazine called Wizards in Space, and we are a printed book. We're a collection of all different writers and artists. And so we do publish like fiction, and we publish poetry, but we also publish like short form illustrations and comics, which is really awesome. So we run the gamut. So we probably publish about 25 creators per book, and each book, just to print a little picture in everybody's brains, each book is about 150 pages. So it's kind of thick. Yeah. And it was really important to me when thinking about why I wanted to run a literary magazine, which like is not always what people like say they're going to do. Like, oh, I can't wait to start a literary magazine. but I don't know, something really captured me about taking the spotlight and turning it around and saying, okay, so we love authors like J.K. Rowling, you know, I'm really into John Green. His books are really amazing. And I was kind of part of this tight-knit community called the Harry Potter community. It's not called the Harry Potter community. It just is. And so growing up, I was like so enamored with so many different big name artists. And as I got a little older, I started to say, okay, well, these artists had to get their start somewhere. So what if I can find people when they're just starting out and kind of harness that energy and harness that power and put it together in one literary magazine? So that was kind of where the idea was born from. And so the name Wizards in Space comes from a love of not only magic and wizards, but creating space for people to kind of be their creative selves. So we pay all the creators that are featured in the magazine. And that was also something that was really, really important to our philosophy going into building a magazine, is that we wanted to be a paying market, because I just don't think people are paid enough for their art. And we really just wanted to like say that out loud and say, hey, if we're going to buy your work so we can also profit off of it, then, you know, we're going to make sure that you get what's due to you. So that's kind of like the basis of it. And then I do have a staff. I'm bad at numbers. So there's either five or six of us with myself included or not. But we have an editorial staff and then other people that also dip into like other things like running our social media, connecting with the authors, doing all the editorial work. I'm on the partnership side of things. So I love finding other artists to work with and do events and things like that. And so we just like to span all sorts of things. So we do events, we do workshops, we do open mics, and then we have like our main like flagship thing, which is the printed book.
Yeah, it's so exciting to hear about that. And like you said at the beginning, you know, literary, you think editing and things like that. It doesn't come off with that pizzazz. But I think when you talk about the content, what you put together from various folks in the different forms and medium, and honestly, given the respect of the volume of honoring that art, I really think that's pretty amazing. I know doing the podcast, entering to and kind of coming in contact with the artistic community, and plus I'm an organizer by profession for quite some time, quickly became apparent and fascinating the things that people had to say and how they put it together, having conversations with people who did something significant, but then don't talk about it anymore and wondering why. Yeah, it was just so exciting to read about your project. I look forward to getting further into it. And God, I love printed books too. As well.
That was so important to me for it to be printed. And, over time, you know, we've begun printing on recycled paper, which is really cool. And I just wanted somebody to either be able to be published in the book and then to be able to hand it to somebody and say, look what I'm in, look what I'm part of, look what I got acknowledged for. Or for friends to share with friends to say, hey, there's a story or a poem in this magazine. Like, I want you to, you know, I want to share it with you and then to be able to give it as a gift or to loan it out or whatever. And then I remember one time I went over to a friend's house and he had Wizards in Space there, and he did a house show and there was another artist there, another writer, and he had one of his literary magazines. So he literally, out of his own bookshelf, gave me and his friend each other's work and said, you guys should get to know each other. And then that person kind of started coming to some of the open mics I was running, and you know, and we've been able to maintain like community that way. And I don't know if online things always have that same tangible nature to build community. They certainly do. As somebody that grew up on the internet and grew up on Harry Potter forums, of course they do, but it's always nice when it transcends, you know, the internet and you can get, you know, literally give it away.
Yeah, I see a general trend with art right now. I'm sure you've observed of a deep desire. I know it's tied to the pandemic and digital for physical media. So I find it really interesting how people are like, I want it. Like, I want the thing. Whatever anybody's choice is, it's just I've seen it develop as a market of the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I want it. I also discovered that you are a musician. One of the thrills I have on the show is in talking to artists, just hearing about the different things that you create. We have a track I'm going to play in just a little bit, but I was wondering, in you talking about your background and your family and your dad about music. So you've been around it. So when did that become part of your art life?
Yeah. Very simply, I have two very early memories of being attracted to music, or some very early memories. I remember my dad would play Vivaldi's Four Seasons in the house sometimes, and I was like just drawn to it in that way that you can't explain. And so I think maybe hearing that at a young age, like, probably imprinted on me. And then my mom really wanted a piano. Like, I'm not sure. I'll have to ask her more about it, but I'm not sure where this desire came from. But she had a big birthday coming up, and my dad was like, "What do you want?" She's like, "I want to learn how to play the piano. I want to be able to sit and do something." And it was that same thing that we were just talking about. Of like, I think she wanted to find a physical hobby. And we got a piano, and having that instrument in the house, and then having an instrument in the house that's like always there, where you can just go to it, sit down and pick it up and like, and play, sit and play. I think that that just infused in me, like, from a young age as well, that like music will always be there. And it's something that you can just like sit and create, just by plunking on some keys. But then also just in elementary school, you know, when you're in like second grade, you start to play the recorder, and a lot of music education when you're young is all about exploration and just like hitting xylophones. And I just loved it. And so I just kind of naturally like always wanted to pick up instruments. And so like the recorder, my jam back then. And then that moved to the violin, and the violin was not my jam, although I do have some regrets about not sticking with it. I played for like a year when I was in second grade. And then in third grade, this woman came in and she did a demonstration of all the instruments and was like, "Here's the instruments that you can choose to play." And she played the trumpet, she played the trombone, she played the clarinet, and then she played the flute. And I just like could not believe that this sound was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And that she could play it so well. And I just was like, I want to do that. That's my thing. And then, you know, and so I picked up the flute, I think in third grade or fourth grade, and I've been playing ever since.
That's incredible. It always seems, when I talk to musicians, it always seems like be a little bit of accident about everything that happens. I mean, artists in general, but, you know, the instrument that's laying around, or that moment that you listen to something like, okay, that sound, mm-hmm. I'm going to make that sound, like, teach me mm-hmm. how to make that sound.
Yeah. It's really interesting how, I don't know, like, it's the same thing that I think about of like why somebody likes broccoli and why somebody doesn't like broccoli. I mean, I like broccoli, and it's a tough vegetable to like, I do get that. But like, how come some people like that, or they love chickpeas, or they like, you know, Italian spices, and somebody's like, no, not for me. Like, I really felt like that way with the flute, where it was just like I just honed it in and beelined and was like, that I want that. Like, that sound is so beautiful. I want to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. I'm going to play, the track, Magic. I'm going to play it right now.
And then, yes. Which has no flute on it.
Yeah. But we didn't even set up that segue at all.
We did not. No, I was like, wow, these people are going to be, maybe we should just let them be blown away. I don't know.
If you're dreaming of flutes now, it'll be a little bit of a difference. A little different, but we're going to play Olivia Dolphin's track Magic right now. We'll be back in just a tiny bit.
You taught me late nights and numbered doors. You showed me crooked stairs and messed up hair. You made me more like gold, like every star that's ever burned. And you gave me something I can't explain, some things you can't explain. I think that it's magic, I think that it's magic, I think that it's magic, I think that we're magic. Think that it's magic, I think that it's magic, think that it's magic, I know that we're magic. Crystal ball to see, it'll all be alright, I'll be alright, we'll be alright, just look around. I think that it's magic, I think that it's it's magic. Think that it's magic. I think that we're magic. Think that it's magic. I think that it's magic. I think that it's magic. I know that we're magic. It's magic. I think that it's magic. I think that it's magic. I think that we're magic. Think that it's magic. I think that it's magic. Think that it's magic. I know that we're magic. I know that we're magic. I know that we're magic.
Thank you, Olivia.
Oh, wow.
Talking on this show all the time, magic's coming up all the time. Like when you talk about art, and I love that, but you know, because we're talking about, like, you know, Western historical philosophical questions, maybe. And I've had some guests that are just saying, you know, the ultimate explanation isn't quite there. You know, that there's something incredible and magical about it. Thank you for the song. I understand you recently played live. You had a live performance recently?
I just did my first live full band show here in Providence at a venue called Dusk. It was awesome. We played that song and a bunch of others, and I've been working on an album, but to play a show with people there to enjoy and to connect and to be able to tell my story to, and to kind of get some energy back in response. Like, it was just awesome. And it was awesome to work with other musicians. It was, you know, there was a couple other bands that played that night. And we also, I'm big on spoken word poetry, obviously, you know, running the literary magazine. And so the night was sponsored by Wizards in Space, but also by my record label, Pitch and Prose. And we always do these collaborative events. And so it's really important for me to have, like, poets there to, like, tell stories. And so the night just was, like, kind of this awesome, like, variety show kind of vibe. And it was just really cool.
Yeah. And even off the, you know, the track itself, you can just feel that, you feel that energy coming off of that. And I can actually envision, you know, with the live performance. And, you know, I enjoy one of the things, again, with the show, coming in contact with poets. You know, I've always loved poetry on and off, getting more into it, but you know, poets and musicians, and actually the most recent episode of the podcast is a music variety episode, you know, so I've had an eclectic taste in music, and it's always kind of interesting to put something together that's like my playlist. I don't know who appeals to, but it was kind of the show's playlist. So we had you know, some doom metal, we had a soprano performance at the end of the episode, we had a couple covers and some music from an Irish singer and poet. So keep a lookout. We'd love to have, you know, one of your tracks on there as well. So music episode 110. And Olivia and I will chat afterwards. We'll try to make sure she's in music episode number 2.
Would love that.
Question. We've been talking about art. We're loosely throwing around that term through the course of this conversation. What is art?
This was one of the questions that you, like, sent to me beforehand. And I have been, this is the one that I was like, what is art? And this might sound hokey or cheesy or campy, but art to me is connection, and art is storytelling. So if you can do any of those things, whether it's connection to yourself or connection to somebody else or to other people or whatever, like, it doesn't have to be an external thing. You're not always with art looking for external validation. So I think you can connect to nature, yourself, other people, whatever, but art to me is that bridge to connection.
Yeah. And talk a lot about connection and communication. I appreciate your definition, Art. I wanted to ask a follow-up question. So, you know, you're an artist and you produce some art, and you put it out into the world. What is the role of art you know, like for us as humans? I mean, you said communication. I don't want to anticipate that's your full answer, but what is the role of art in human society?
I think sometimes art can act as like a mirror or a funhouse mirror. And it really can, you know, art, I think, can challenge people in a really good way, where you might challenge your assumptions, or you might challenge like some of your internal beliefs, because you might see art that can change your opinion, can inform you differently. But I also think art can calm, and art can let you know that you're not alone. And I think that, you know, I, in my personal life and with Wizards in Space, like, I try to find that balance with what we're publishing or what we're engaging with, is like, we want to challenge people, but we also want them to know that it's a safe space for them to come and like feel their feelings. So I think that that kind of is the role of art, or at least it's the role that I've assigned to the art that I create, where I just am having a feeling, and I am probably not the only person having that feeling. And if I put it out in the world and somebody hears it or reads it and they felt something similar, they felt heard or they felt seen, then I think that that's amazing. And if not, then at least I got the feeling out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to not forget our connection to the University of Rhode Island, and to actually give you, to tell you, like, in a certain sense, like, we're part of this podcast. So I wanted to talk a little bit about our connection to the University of Rhode Island, where we both went to school. And I want to mention a particular kind of strange kernel of this show. Back when I was a student in finishing my studies at the University of Rhode Island, I took a philosophy of art course with Cheryl Foster, who's an award-winning professor in the philosophy department. And a lot of those questions I thought throughout my life had just remained dormant. And then going to do a podcast that was based on those philosophical questions, I've always felt like, all the way back going to the University of Rhode Island and me doing these questions now. I also had the distinct pleasure of teaching, being a professor at the URI for a philosophy course, which was another great opportunity in my life to do some aspect of myself. So love the University of Rhode Island, beautiful campus, a great school. What about you in developing your art at the university? What was that environment like? And just a little follow-up to that, Providence in the arts of there. But starting at the University of Rhode Island, how did you feel your art came together or developed during your time there?
Yeah, it's so interesting. So when I went to URI, I enrolled as a music education major, and then that lasted for a semester before I realized that I personally don't have the teaching bug. I love to mentor, but I don't have that like stand up in front of a classroom and teach kind of vibe. And a lot of my friends are teachers, and shout out to them. They've had a rough 2 years. But I went into flute performance, and I thought that maybe I would make a living with flute performance. And then also very quickly with flute performance, I just realized like, oh, I love playing the flute, but I don't love it in the way that I would need to love it to make it a sustainable living. And so now I'm at the University of Rhode Island, and I'm like, okay, so music teaching didn't work out, and like being a flute teacher isn't going to work out, and playing the flute for a living isn't going to work out for me personally. It's not that these things aren't unachievable. It just like wasn't vibing with me. And so I said, okay, I got to pick up something else. So I picked up a writing and rhetoric major while I was there. And that major, I don't know if it was if it was available when you were there, but that major was very interesting, where you could study all different types of writing. So you could study travel writing, you could study like essay writing, and then more importantly, you could study like rhetoric. And rhetoric was kind of the application of philosophy in a way, where you're making points and you're supporting them, and you're figuring out how to storytell in a persuasive way. And that education, more than anything, like really kind of just had me hone into like the way of storytelling, I think. And then otherwise too, like obviously like working as a music major, it's intense to be a music major. It's so intense. So to stick with the music, you know, track, and then to also kind of add a couple things onto it, I just like you have to kind of know yourself and know your limits and know what you're capable of. But it just absolutely, the beauty of URI, so if there's any prospective students listening, the beauty of URI is that you can bounce around and do a couple things and graduate within 4 or 5 years. I did 5 years. There's no shame in it. And I was able to really explore some passions. So I thought I was going to graduate with a classics minor as well. So I was really into Greek mythology. So even though I didn't graduate with that degree, I took a lot of classics courses, and like that's just another avenue into storytelling. And the myths and the magic of Greek mythology, you know, and I could kind of like all of these things that you're doing for 5 years are in your brain. And I think it's what you said, where I think that the fault of colleges is that they want you to process these things in like 4 or 5 years. But man, 10 years later, I'm just now getting some of the things that I was taught then. Like it had to marinate for like 10 years. And now I'm like, oh, like I get it now. Or like I get what that professor was trying to say. So I really just like owe a lot, I think, to my professors and everything at URI for like being patient with me and letting me explore.
Yeah, that's I was just jotting down from my recollection is we've had connecting to the University of Rhode Island, professor of mine, Mary Capello, has been a guest. Huge influence on me. And Buell Thomas, who took philosophy courses with me. He's also a musician in the Bronx. And two of his cover tracks are actually on the music episode. And Dave Varespi from the University of Rhode Island around the time that I went is a photographer. So, and now we have you, Olivia Dalton.
Yeah, all these people from Little Rhodey.
Hey, that's the way that's the way it happens from Little Rhodey. So,
yeah.
Got an additional question, another bigger question. And you might have got at this a little bit, but I always ask it. What or who made you who you are?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's a tough one. There's so many things running through my head right now. Rapid fire thoughts, growing up on the internet. So the internet, Harry Potter was a big part of my childhood. The Magic Treehouse, like reading, like, so yeah. Like books, in general, not just Harry Potter, but I think in this case, I do want to give a big shout out to my parents. I was very fortunate to come from a family that just allowed exploration. Like my parents did not force their own beliefs on me in any way. And if I said I was interested in something, they took that seriously as a child and said, okay, we're going to foster that. So like, I remember, like, I wanted to be a librarian. And so my mom, like, still talks about that to this day. She's like, I remember when you wanted to be a librarian and you just loved to read and you were reading all the time. And like, I loved magic, I loved fairies, I loved all that stuff. So my mom like fostered that, you know. I really do have to talk a little bit about my parents, because I was fortunate to come from people that like valued my curiosity as a child and fostered it. And so if I was into reading, which I was, and I was like wanted to be a librarian, like really young, like my mom just fostered that. And so she would buy me books. Like my mom was the one that brought Harry Potter into the house and said, I think you might like this. And then when I did like it, she was the one that was like, let's go to the midnight releases. Like, let's take you to the red carpet premieres. Like, let's foster this love. And the same thing with music, like they put me in lessons, they pushed me to be good at things, but not in an aggressive way. So like they wanted me to be good at it because they knew I wanted to be good at it. And they saw me putting in the work. So they did that. So I really would, you know, I want to give a shout out to good old mom and dad here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mentioned the theme in recent episodes. We keep bumping into a lot of conversations about, you know, kids and whether it's cultivated. We talked about the education system. You know, if you're an artist when you're born, when is that knocked out of you, or when is it accelerated? And obviously, the issues of, you know, whether you're person of color, you're a woman, and other issues as far as whether somebody's going to say to you, yeah, play that song. Yeah, tap away at that piano and those drums. And it's it's an important thing to point out. I got the conceptual questions again. I've hit you with a few when we're talking about life and otherwise, but there's the big question that I do want to ask, which is, why is there something rather than nothing?
Wow. Does everybody take like the big deep breaths after you ask
this question? Let's talk about the question. Oh my gosh. Like, and most guests have read it and most guests have, like, here's my theory. Most guests read the question and say, he ain't going to ask me that. Even though it's the name and title of the show.
The name of the podcast. Like, I knew this one was coming. Question,
I know it's the name of the show, but I don't think he's really going to go ahead and ask me that. And I believe when I asked it recently of a guest, Larissa Birdseye, it might have been this question. She called me a bastard. It was this question or another one. But there is a deep pause. There is a deep breath. And then you try to get at maybe one of the bigger questions ever. Why is there something rather than nothing?
Right now I keep thinking about this documentary I watched recently called Fantastic Fungi, and it's on Netflix, and it's all about mushrooms and magic mushrooms and the mycelia that lives, like, that grows underneath the surface. And I don't know, it was a very humbling documentary to watch where I felt like I left it different. Like, I watched it and I said, oh, I'm just part of this ecosystem. Like, sometimes I think I can live my life like I'm a main character, like I'm the main character. And I think everybody's entitled to that. Like, we're all writing our own stories. And I think we're entitled to that. But I do try to take a step back and, like, understand that every single person I'm talking to is living their own story and they're living their own experiences, and they can be drastically different than mine. And all of this is to say, I think there's something rather than nothing, because we're meant to learn from each other, I think. And we're meant to connect to each other, even if it's to nature and to the mushrooms and the fungus that lives under the earth, or the experiences that we're having, I think they're meant to be shared. Which I think is probably why I'm so drawn to telling stories and collecting those stories into a book and, you know, publishing music and turning my poems into art and things like that. Because if this is the something, then I want to do something with it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why there's something, so we can do something with it.
Yeah. I found recently, just on the sense of, like, you know, what to do in the, like, the world situation and the pandemic, I felt just a greater immediacy around some of these questions and creating art. And I've also seen two, like, kind of reactions to the world. One is being like, stop beating on me, world, like, let me get away. We all feel that. And the other part too is, amongst, like, this change and chaos and complete structural changes in society, that the artist is just trying to, like, breathe and, like, get that out there and have more immediacy. And it's a big thing for creatives to handle, because we can say that the conditions don't seem super for being at peace in, or whatever, you know, your process is. And if somebody's theory is to create out of chaos, then now's the time, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's something I've been thinking a lot about, you know, especially with the pandemic, some people have created a lot and some people have not created as much, you know, and I think that like creativity has its seasons. And one of those, like the cycle of it is you intake a lot in your life. So you intake all of these experiences. And as artists, I think we do a lot of noticing. And so to output, you have to let all of the noticing process, and then you can kind of form it into something, whatever it is. For me, it's poetry. And then I take bits of those poetry and turn them into songs. And then, you know, and then you put it out there. But you have to have that, you have to have that noticing first. And sometimes that can take months, that can take years. And then, you know, and then maybe you'll have like a rush of output. I guess that's just a little like thought bucket for somebody to take away, is that, you know, if you feel like you should be outputting some art, like it's okay. Like maybe you're in your intake season and you should embrace that. And then let the outtake, you know, the output come from that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I know you have a few different types of art, and there might be different places to find your stuff. Can you let the listeners know, whether it's music or getting copies or ordering the magazine, or can you let the listeners know where to find Olivia Dolphin and the things you work on?
Yeah. Okay. Let me run it down. So the most important thing, I think, well, it's all important, but Wizards in Space Literary Magazine, you can find us at wizardsinspacemag.com. And right now we are working on our 7th issue. So we have chosen all of our creators, but we need the funds to make this happen. So we're doing a pre-order campaign right now. And then there's also this ability to sponsor a creator. So if you want to know that you directly made an impact on getting somebody paid, then we have the ability for you to sponsor a creator. But more importantly than that, like the book, issue 7 is, our theme was bridges and barriers, and we got some amazing art on it. And we're publishing authors from like 15 different countries or something wild like that.
Wow.
Like it's, we publish internationally, and a lot of our writers are international as well. So it's really a beautiful collection. And I think bridges and barriers right now, like people really responded to that theme.
Good.
So wizardsinspacemag.com. And then to find me personally, you can find me at LividDoll, LIVIDOL on Instagram and Twitter. Please connect with me. I love chatting with people and meeting other artists and people that are interested in art. And then that's probably the best place to find my music, but my label is Pigeon Prose. They're a Providence-based label. So you can find some of my stuff on Pigeon Prose, and we're currently recording my first EP, which is going to be a collection of songs that I wrote, and I'm really excited. So definitely keep an eye on the Pigeon Prose pages as well to keep up with the music side of things.
That's awesome. That sounds so great. And an EP sounds, just sounds really, really super as well. I'm going to be creating, the podcast's first zine issue. So I've really connected to kind of the way you've organized things and are talking about collating those type of experience. And one of the things you mentioned, the international component, I found that to be personally so exciting as a creator, because when I started the podcast, I didn't know, you know, kind of like who you talk to or where my mind would go. And approximately 25%, maybe more, of all the episodes are from other nations. The guests, including indigenous nations within North America, but, you know, Europe and, you know, and other continents in Australia. So not expecting that, but the way to collate around art and collect folks around art is really exciting. And so I really appreciate your comments around some of the things that you've done, because coming in September 2021 here, we're going to have that first issue, and I'll make sure you get a copy of the first zine. And like,
so cool.
Yeah. So, Really great to hear about the opportunities for listeners and myself to support your art. But I wanted to thank you for the things that you do, and also thank, gosh, URI Magazine for me out in Oregon to read about you and the cool stuff that you're doing. Shout out to University of Rhode Island, Providence, and always love to do a show with the greatest little state, as they call it. So thank you so much, Olivia. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Ken. This was a really interesting conversation. I didn't know what to expect, which I did that on purpose because I like to, you know, see what's going to happen and be open-minded. And so, you know, I kind of like didn't want to have any preconceived notions, even with my own thoughts on some of the really amazing questions you've asked. So I appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and connect with everybody that's listening. And, you know, please, you know, reach out, everybody, and like, let's keep the conversation going and talk about art. Like, I love this so much.
Yeah. Awesome. And here's for more safe live shows, and here's for that EP and that wonderful new issue of Wizards in Space. And the title of that most recent one, that was Barriers and Bridges.
Bridges and Barriers. Yeah, it's our theme. So, you know, the writing will kind of like encapsulate that. And sometimes the theme, you know, sometimes when they'll get hit on the head, and sometimes it's, you know, you can kind of like leave your own connection. But it's just a way for us to make a cohesive collection with some of the amazing submissions that we get. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Olivia. Hold down the fort in the art world in Providence. And my gosh, we probably still have a bunch to talk about, so I'm sure we're going to chat again soon.
I would love that. Yeah, I feel like it would be amazing to keep this conversation going.
Thanks, Olivia, and talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much.